Good morning. I'm here today to talk about parent attitudes about school immunization requirements for HPV vaccine in high-risk communities of Los Angeles, California. Before I begin, I would like to thank my co-authors. Human papillomavirus, or HPV, is one of the most common sexually transmitted infections, or STIs. Persistent HPV infection can cause cervical cancer, other oropharyngeal and anogenital cancers, and genital warts. There are over 40 types of HPV which infect the genital tract, but the greatest burden of disease is caused by four types. HPV types 16 and 18 cause up to 70% of cervical cancers, and types 6 and 11 cause 90% of genital warts. While HPV is a common sexually transmitted infection across all racial ethnic groups, there are large disparities in cervical cancer incidence by race, ethnicity. Hispanics and African Americans have substantially higher rates than non-Hispanic whites. A quadrivalent vaccine against HPV type 6, 11, 16, and 18 was introduced in the United States in June 2006, and 3 years later, a bivalent vaccine against type 16 and 18 was introduced. Both HPV vaccines are highly efficacious if given prior to sexual debut. Therefore, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, recommends routine use of HPV vaccine in 11 to 12-year-old girls with catch-up vaccination through age 26. Because of its high primary prevention efficacy, HPV vaccine has the potential to reduce racial disparities in cervical cancer if there is broad vaccine uptake. In general, school immunization requirements have increased uptake of childhood vaccines, and at least one study has specifically shown that school immunization requirements can decrease racial disparities in disease by increasing vaccine uptake evenly across racial and ethnic groups. HPV immunization requirements have been proposed by many jurisdictions in the United States and have passed in Virginia and Washington, D.C. These laws have broad opt-out provisions. Proposed requirements have been controversial given unique concerns about having vaccine requirements against a sexually transmitted virus that is not highly contagious with casual classroom contact. While editorials and medical literature and the popular media have highlighted potential parental concerns about HPV vaccine school requirements, there is limited direct information on acceptability of these requirements to parents of adolescent girls. Further, to our knowledge, even less information is available about attitudes towards these requirements among populations at highest risk for cervical cancer, including Hispanics. In addition, little information exists on how opt-out options affect HPV vaccine school requirement acceptability. With this study, we aim to evaluate the acceptability of HPV vaccine school requirements to parents of adolescents in communities at elevated risk for cervical cancer, to describe the correlates of parental support for such requirements, and to describe parental acceptability of such requirements when an opt-out option is included. During October 2007 to June 2008, we conducted a telephone survey of parents or guardians of 11 to 18-year-old girls attending schools in the Los Angeles Unified School District. Parents were randomly selected from school rosters to complete the one-time 30-minute interview. The response rate was 48%. Parents were interviewed in English or Spanish according to their preference. The parents were selected from the rosters of the 26 schools participating in Project Connect. Project Connect is a randomized controlled trial of structural interventions to prevent STIs, such as increasing condom availability in schools and improving school nurse referrals to adolescent-friendly clinicians. Schools were selected for the study because they had high teenage pregnancy and STI rates in their catchment areas. These schools serve mainly racial and ethnic minorities that tend to have higher cervical cancer risk. 76% of students in these schools are Hispanic, and about 10% are African American. Interviewers questioned parents about basic demographics, their daughter's HPV vaccination status, intention to vaccinate in the next year if their daughter had not yet been vaccinated, attitudes toward HPV and the HPV vaccine, and agreement with HPV school immunization requirements. To ask about HPV immunization requirements, interviewers stated, some states are trying to pass laws that would require all 11 and 12-year-old girls to get the HPV vaccine before they are allowed to start the sixth grade. Please tell me how strongly you agree or disagree with the following statements about this. Parents were first asked about their opinions of the statement, "I think these laws are a good idea." After parents responded to this statement, interviewers then asked their opinions of the statement, "These laws are okay only if parents can opt out if they want to." We collected data using 4-point Likert scales, ranging from strongly disagree to strongly agree. For the analyses I'll present here, data were collapsed to dichotomous agree-disagree response scales. For all attitude questions, don't know options were not offered but recorded if given. We first assessed agreement with the statement, "I think these laws are a good idea." Bivariate associations were evaluated with a chi-square test, and independent associations were then evaluated using multivariate logistic regression using a backward selection process. We then repeated these analyses when agreement with an opt-out option was included. The study population consisted of 509 parents. 81% were Hispanic and 15% were African American. 71% completed the survey in Spanish. Almost half of survey respondents had only an eighth grade education or less. Daughters had a mean age of 14.5 years. 23% of respondents reported that their daughters had initiated HPV vaccine, and another 47% stated that they intended to vaccinate their daughters in the next year. I will now present information about parental agreement with the statement, "I think these laws are a good idea." Overall, for the 484 parents with available data, 59% of parents agreed with this statement. As shown here, age was associated with parents' agreement with school requirements. Younger parents were slightly more likely to agree that HPV school immunization laws are a good idea. There were marked differences in agreement by race, ethnicity, and survey language. 68% of Hispanic parents responding in Spanish agreed the laws are a good idea, as opposed to 48% of Hispanic parents responding in English. Only 26% of African American respondents agreed with the laws. Education level was also associated with HPV vaccine school requirement opinions. Respondents who had a college education were less likely than those with less education to agree that the laws were a good idea at 35%. Parents whose daughters had not been vaccinated against HPV and who were unsure or did not plan to vaccinate her within the next year were less likely to agree with the laws. Those who had already vaccinated their daughters or who said they probably or definitely will vaccinate their daughters within the next year were more likely to agree that HPV school immunization laws were a good idea. The 6 attitudes shown here were correlated with parental agreement with HPV school immunization laws. There were 4 attitudes associated with decreased agreement with the laws, and 2 attitudes correlated with an increased agreement with the laws, as shown here. I have chosen to focus here on 2 of the attitudes that had the most striking differences with respect to agreement with the laws. These 2 attitudes were also the only 2 attitudes that remain significantly associated with agreement in the multivariate model. Among parents who believe that the vaccine works well, 70% agreed with HPV school immunization laws. This level of agreement was higher than that of parents who disagreed that the vaccine works well at 28%. It is interesting to note that nearly half of parents responded saying that they do not know if the vaccine works well and that this was associated with intermediate agreement with the laws. Parents who agreed that the HPV vaccine is too new for laws like these were less likely to agree with the HPV school immunization requirements compared with parents who did not believe that the vaccine is too new, 49% versus 79%. We then completed a multivariate analysis to look at independent associations of agreement with the laws. After controlling for other factors, only 4 things were independently associated with agreement. I will discuss those things here. Parents' race survey language was the only demographic factor significantly associated with belief that the laws are a good idea. Hispanic parents answering this survey in English were less likely than those responding in Spanish to agree that the laws were a good idea with an odds ratio of 0.4. African American parents were even less likely to agree with the requirements with an odds ratio of 0.2. When looking at the independent association of vaccination status and agreement with the laws, there was no statistically significant difference between those who do not plan to vaccinate their daughters in the next year and those who are unsure of whether they will vaccinate their daughters in the next year. Those who had already vaccinated their daughters or who had not yet vaccinated but intended to in the next year had greater odds of agreeing with the laws than those who had not vaccinated their daughters and had no intent to, with an odds ratio of over 2. Parents who did not believe that the HPV vaccine works well were less likely than those who did believe that the vaccine works well to agree that the laws are a good idea, with an odds ratio of 0.2. Parents who did not know if the vaccine works well were less likely to agree that the laws are a good idea. This difference was statistically significant. Parents who did not believe that the vaccine is too new for laws like these were more likely than parents who believe that the laws are too new to agree with HPV school immunization laws, with an odds ratio of 4.7. We then looked at the effect of having an opt-out option on parental agreement with HPV school immunization laws. As shown here, 58% of parents agreed that these laws are a good idea when an opt-out option was not mentioned. When we then asked parents about agreement with the statement, "These laws are okay only if parents can opt out," another 34% of parents agreed. Thus, when an opt-out option was added, 92% of parents agreed with one of these two statements about HPV school immunization requirements. As shown here by the orange bars on the right, the effect of having an opt-out option increased acceptability across all race language categories. Acceptability of the laws to Hispanic parents responding in either English or Spanish increased to over 90%. Moreover, it is interesting to note that acceptability of the laws increased from 25% to 75% among African American parents. But the overall agreement with laws in this group was still lower than that of Hispanic parents. When looking at vaccination status and intent to vaccinate, the increase in agreement was considerably higher among those who had not vaccinated their daughter yet and were unsure about their intent to vaccinate in the next year compared to other groups. Also, while parents who had not vaccinated their daughters yet and had no intent to did increase in agreement with the laws, the overall agreement among this group was still lower than that of other parents. As seen here, the effect of having an opt-out option was a greater increase in acceptability among parents who believe that the vaccine is too new for laws like these. With this increase, there is then little difference between those that agree and those that disagree that the vaccine is too new for such laws. When looking at the attitude that the vaccine works well, those that disagree or don't know if the vaccine works well had a greater increase in agreement than those who agree that the vaccine works well. Nonetheless, overall agreement was still considerably lower for parents who disagree that the vaccine works well. By multivariate analysis, the same factors as those associated with agreement with the laws were associated with agreement when an opt-out option was included, except that the belief that the vaccine is too new for such laws was no longer independently associated with agreement. Overall, acceptability of HPV vaccine school requirements was high in this population. Parents were more likely to agree that the laws were a good idea if they were Hispanic, responding in Spanish, had daughters who were already vaccinated or who they plan to vaccinate in the next year, believe that the vaccine works well, or disagree that the vaccine is too new for laws like these. More parents agreed with laws that had an opt-out option. With an opt-out option, the greatest increases in acceptability of the requirements were among African Americans and parents who had not yet vaccinated their daughter and were unsure if they would in the next year. However, despite these increases in agreement, differences remained between groups. This study had several limitations. First, the study was conducted in an urban setting with participants from racial and ethnic minorities So results may not be generalizable to other settings. The survey had a relatively low response rate, but this response rate is similar to that of digital dial telephone surveys, which have been shown to be valid despite lower response rates. Finally, while the surveys were professionally translated and given by bilingual interviewers, one must always consider the possibility that language and cultural differences affected survey responses. This study showed that HPV vaccine school requirements were highly acceptable to Hispanics, an ethnic group with a disproportionately high cervical cancer incidence. This is particularly relevant because one of the main benefits of such requirements would be decreasing racial and ethnic disparities in disease. While Hispanics were likely to agree with the laws, acceptability was lower among African Americans. Some of the racial and ethnic differences in opinion could be due to cultural differences between racial and ethnic groups. In Latino or Hispanic culture, respect for authority figures is highly valued. Because of this belief, Hispanic parents may be less likely to disagree with authority, and thus less likely to disagree with or question the guidance of healthcare professionals. The lack of support of the requirements by African American parents could be explained by an increased healthcare mistrust in the African American community. This survey was completed soon after the vaccine was introduced, and nearly half of surveyed parents were uncertain of vaccine efficacy and safety. Perhaps uncertainty about efficacy and safety may decrease with time and culturally relevant education, leading to increased parental support of such requirements. According to the National Vaccine Advisory Committee, or NVAC, parental acceptance, as well as other factors, should be considered before introducing adolescent school immunization requirements. NVAC also recommends considering vaccine cost, funding, supply, safety, and efficacy, along with school district support, disease burden and transmission, and existing policies and legislation. It also recommends considering concerns unique to each jurisdiction's population. Overall, an opt-out option increased parental support of HPV school immunization laws across all groups, but differences in parental agreement by race ethnicity remained. It is important to note that at this time, it is unclear how requirements with an opt-out option would impact uptake of the HPV vaccine. For example, if many parents opt out, there may be very little impact, and coverage may be no different than that in schools with no requirements. On the other hand, as such requirements provide information or serve as reminders to get the vaccine, they could increase uptake. There are some concerns that broader opt-outs for HPV vaccine may lead to increased exemptions for other vaccines. Broader exemptions for other vaccines have led to lower vaccine coverage and increases in vaccine-preventable disease. Discussion about HPV school immunization requirements continues. Moving forward, it will be important to consider and evaluate the experiences of Virginia and Washington, D.C., which have passed HPV immunization requirements with broad opt-out provisions. Our data suggests that there may be differences in acceptability of HPV school immunization requirements that may be unique to specific jurisdictions, and this could have implications for considering HPV vaccine school requirements in different areas in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. The floor is now open for questions or discussion with our speakers. I just ask that you step to the microphone here, and if you do ask a question, just please let us know your name and where you're from. Any questions?
Good morning. I'm Thad Wilson from Kansas City, and thank you both for your presentations. They were excellent. This is more of an opinion question than a question about content. You listed, I think it was 8 items, Mr. Colgrove, that need to be addressed before or as part of an ongoing effort. Do you have a suggestion or an idea of who should answer those questions? Should it be led by the CDC? I mean, it sounds like it's regulatory, so that may not be the best group. Should it be professional groups, et cetera?
I think all, is this on? Can you hear me? I think all stakeholders have a role in answering those questions. Because concerns often tend to be very localized, I think there you could make an argument that, that those efforts should be led, state by state. I can imagine a process where a state health department might convene a group of interested stakeholders, certainly legislators who chair health committees in their state legislatures or who have an interest in legislation could lead that effort and might be able to bring together stakeholders more effectively because they have somewhat more freedom to move around politically. I think it's a discussion that needs to happen, you know, among everyone who has a stake in these laws.
Hi, Robin Curtis from CDC. Rachel, I have a question for you. Did you all have any means of characterizing the non-respondents?
No, we did not.
And do you have any sense of how representative your respondents were of the community? If you presented it, I'm sorry I missed it.
This is Sammy Gottlieb. She's one of my co-authors who was more involved in the actual study design.
This hasn't been looked at in detail, but from the information that we do have, the only thing that was of note is that slightly fewer African American parents participated.
Hi, Charlene Wong from CDC. I have a somewhat related question. You talked about this Women in Government group, who I didn't realize was funded so much by Merck, as being one of the major lobbying forces for these laws. I was curious to know who else were lobbying for these laws, like who were the other major groups who were pushing for these?
Right. Well, first of all, I should stress that Women in Government is a very well-established organization that has a long track record of advocating for women's health issues, and a lot of the press coverage around them I thought was quite unfair because they made it sound as if they were simply a front group for Merck, which they most certainly were not, and I'm actually not convinced that they acted in a way that was unethical. They received an unrestricted educational grant from Merck. They had a long-standing interest in cervical cancer prevention. So just to be clear on that, Merck worked with a variety of professional organizations. There was a piece in JAMA a few months ago by David Rothman and Sheila Rothman looking at this issue. I'm not remembering specifically, but they were medical specialty organizations related to, I think, women's health and cervical cancer. Not so different from what you see pharmaceutical companies do in working with medical professional groups in other areas. The impression we got was that the intensity of Merck lobbying actually varied widely from state to state. So in some cases, they were highly involved through public relations consultants who they hired in those states. In other states, their studies appeared, or their involvement appeared to be fairly limited.
Hi, I'm Jeff Berg with the Wisconsin Immunization Program. I was just curious, this for Dr. Colgrove. Did you query the acceptance of the state or the immunization program projects in those states that you surveyed to see if there was any buy-in from them? I know in Wisconsin when this finally hit, it was like it came in through the back door that we were normally we would have. Conversations with the drug manufacturers and work through our Wisconsin immunization cooperative agreements to establish a requirement. But and for some vaccines, like when measles and rubella vaccine were licensed, there was no lobbying for that. It was just over time. It became a part of the immunization law. But with HPV, it came on very fast, and it seemed like there was no buy-in from the state immunization program.
So your question is, were the immunization managers at the state health department in each state involved?
Right.
Well, we spoke to at least one person, sometimes multiple people, in the state health department in every state. And one of the things that came out in this is that many stakeholders, not just the people in the state health department, felt that they had not sufficiently been involved in the process, and that one of the concerns was the perception that Merck had, in a sense, done an end run around the people who should have been making those decisions. People felt that it was inappropriate for Merck to go directly to legislators who, again, might not be in the best position to understand the value of mandates or the concerns that might be raised about mandates. Did I answer your question?
My name's Louise Eckenstam, and I'm from a local health department out of Utah. I have two questions. My first one is with regards to the study. Do you know if there's any future plans of doing the study with the new guidelines for the males? And my second question is, in the two states that do have mandates, are they considering changing that to include the boys as part of those mandates?
I'm not sure if that was for you, or I'm sorry. The first question about studies of attitudes towards males.
Well, you did the study, you know, specific to the girls, what the parents felt on the girls, and I was wondering whether you would, if there was any future intentions to do a similar study, but including, you know, asking the questions for your daughters and your sons, and then also on the school mandates for the including the boys as well.
At this time, we have no future plans to do this study for males.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, and I should emphasize that our interviews were all done before Cervarix was licensed, so the mandates that were being considered would have been for girls only. It's a very interesting question. I actually don't know what Virginia and DC are going to do now that Cervarix has been licensed, if maybe there is somebody here from Virginia. Are you from Virginia or DC?
I'm from Virginia.
Oh, okay, so maybe we have our answer right here.
Hi, I'm Sandy Summer with Virginia, and at this point, we are not aware of any plans to include boys in our mandate. We're having enough trouble with the current mandate.
Interesting. Gosh, do you want to say more about that? Or
every year since the legislation was passed, we have had bills introduced to rescind that legislation, and this current legislative activity, we also had a bill introduced to allow philosophical exemptions, which was a concern when we have a very liberal opt-out. The HPV vaccine is unique in how it's managed in terms of our school requirements. And there was concern when that bill was passed to allow HPV that we would have increased activity to allow a philosophical exemption. In the last two or three years, when we've had bills to rescind the HPV requirement, and this past year, when the philosophical exemption was introduced, they've all died during the legislative process. But we anticipate increased activity in that area.
And also, I just should note, not specific to Virginia, but there has been some interesting studies of parent attitudes about boys. I'm actually not sure what they have found, but there's been a little bit of, I think, sort of preliminary research on that area, but certainly more is needed now that this new vaccine is available.
Hi, I'm Jackie Campbell, nurse specialist from Washington, D.C., and currently we are not aware of any plans for including boys in that legislation.
Interesting, thank you.
Lori Markowitz from CDC. Just wanted to clarify that right now the quadrivalent vaccine, which is the only vaccine licensed for use in boys, is not recommended routinely. ACIP provided guidance for use of the vaccine, but it's not a routine recommendation. So I don't think anyone would even at this point consider including males in a mandate. And Cervarix is just licensed for use in females.
Oh, thank you.
Well, if there are no other questions, then please join me once again in thanking our speakers for this evening.